You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. This is your host, Stephen Novella, president of the New England Skeptical Society, and today is Wednesday, January 2nd, 2008. Joining me this evening are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Rebecca Watson.
Hello, everyone.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year.
And Evan Bernstein.
Yes, and a Happy New Year to everybody, all our listeners, and all of you.
Yes, Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
We are looking forward to a great 2008.
Woohoo. And it will be.
That rhymes, Steve.
It is.
What is 2008? Is that the year of the cock again?
It's always the year of the cock around here.
All right.
Bob, what are you talking about? The Chinese, symbol thing they have?
No, well, you know, there's a year of the dragon, there's a year of the cat or whatever, and there's a year of the cock.
Talking about Chinese astrology.
All right, that's, yeah.
Everybody
that's
knows that.
Has everyone made their New Year's resolution?
I did.
Yes. My New Year's resolution is to rock harder.
Even harder in 2008.
I mean, I rocked pretty hard in 2007, but I'm going to take it to a whole new level in 2008.
Going to raise the bar on hard rocking.
And also to be skeptical.
Most of mine are still intact.
Year of the rat.
2008, year of the rat.
Cool. Well, you know, it's actually not the Chinese New Year yet. That's another week away.
Yeah.
A month away.
Burst the bubble. No.
But 2008 in general is the year of something.
You have to expect us to be pedantic.
What's your, Steve, what was your resolution?
I did start a new blog this year, as we discussed on the wrap-up show. I was planning on starting a new blog, and I did. So the science-based medicine
Good
blog
job.
At its first post yesterday on January 1st and second post today. And I got my other authors all lined up contributing their posts. They're already going up online.
That's a nice lineup, Steve.
Oh, cool. How many guys do you have?
So far, five, but I've already had multiple people email me and say that they want to get involved. They want to contribute. You know, they have specialties not covered already, a dentist or whatever, some other kind of nurse, you know, other healthcare professionals who want to contribute to the blog. So it's already getting a lot of play. PZ Myers, who writes the most popular science blog in the world, Pharyngula, gave us a plug on his blog today.
He did. Awesome. Wow. Ooh, cool. I got to check that out.
Yeah, so it's getting off to a good start.
So, Steve, is your goal to do one? You'll contribute one a week?
A week, yeah. Me personally will be one a week, and we're going to have at least one post a day.
As opposed to me not personally?
As opposed to me, you know, supervising other people doing it, right? I will actually write one blog a week, and other people will contribute the rest.
Steve, is Mark Crislip going to be writing?
He has promised to do an occasional contribution. He doesn't think that he has time for a weekly contribution. So he says he's busy. He's busy enough just putting out Quackcast. It'll be hard to add anything to that. But I'm still working on him.
Make it happen, man.
You'll get him in line.
Last year, the first episode of 2007, we reviewed psychic predictions for 2000 and for the previous year, for 2006, to see how they did. They did terribly. So we're gonna do the same thing again this year. We're going to review the psychic predictions for 2007 to see how they did. On last year's show, we did mention there was one prediction for 2007 that we mentioned, and that was Pat Robertson's prediction. Do you guys remember what he predicted?
No.
He predicted
that Jesus would return.
That there would be, no, not quite. He predicted that there would be a major terrorist attack on a U.S. city sometime late in 2007, and that, if you remember, he said God didn't say nuclear, didn't necessarily saying it's going to be nuclear, but it will be something like that, something on the scale of a nuclear attack or a major mass killing in late 2007.
And was that science or fiction?
Well, unless I'm really out of the news cycle, I don't think that occurred. So I think...
Doesn't mean God didn't tell him that it wouldn't, you know, that... would have occurred.
Yeah, maybe God's just messing with Pat
Robertson.
Yeah, right.
God's just
God said,
wrong.
Psych!
Steve, he said that God explicitly told him.
Yes.
Yep. He wasn't...
Yes.
But you know the out for these things. Always the out is, our faith and prayers prevented it from happening. There you go.
That's right. You weren't
disaster averted.
Whatever.
Scusi, really regretty, and up he goes.
Let's hope God doesn't start telling him to burn things.
Books or something.
I mean, really, anybody else says that God is speaking directly to them is going to get thrown in the loony bin. Pat Robertson gets a pass somehow. I don't understand it.
Has he addressed his failure in any way? Have you searched for any updates from him? Or I'm sure he's probably just ignoring the whole thing.
Nope. If somebody finds one out there, let us know. But I could not find any follow-up from Pat Robertson. You know, when you make these predictions and you fail, generally you just quietly let it go and don't comment on it.
But if you hit, it's a nice hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Oh, that's right. Yeah, you play that for as much as you can get out of it.
And we did discuss this briefly last year. You know, why do psychics and mentalists or mediums do this kind of thing? It's kind of an easy way to try to get some, you know, media time or some press. It looks impressive when you make interesting sounding predictions, and people, you know, the public eats it up. They like to read these predictions, and you're very rarely ever held accountable for how many were correct or how many were wrong. And they use several techniques in order to make it seem as if they are more successful than they are, like promoting the hits and never mentioning the misses. I've never seen a psychic like actually accurately tracking their hit and miss rate in any kind of objective way. They usually just promote the hits. They also make vague predictions that sound specific. They sound like there's some specific details in there, but they're specifically designed to be open-ended and to allow for multiple interpretations. Or they predict very, very high probability things. You know, they predict like
a California earthquake.
There's going to be an earthquake in California. Or, you know, maybe they'll go for like who's going to be elected president. There's a limited, you know, there's a finite field, so it's specific. But there's, you know, because the choices are limited, it's at least a reasonable probability of being correct.
I finally found some psychics that claim to have predicted 9/11.
Mm-hmm. After the fact.
Well, I don't know the circumstances, but they claim that they did it. And
who are they?
The psychic
and
twins.
Do they have proof?
Have you ever heard of them?
The psychic twins?
Yeah, it's these two hot girls, and they're psychics.
I was about to say, it sounds sexy. Okay.
Yeah. And they
you dial 1-900 for their for your reading.
The first thing they ask you is, "We're going to tell you what you're not wearing." But they
$3.99 a minute.
You know, the thing is, they never tell you what they missed. There's just a list on their site of all the things that they hit. I couldn't find any reference to what they actually said. So mm-hmm. And when they said it, but they're hot.
Yeah.
So that makes up for it, right?
Well, our good friend Sylvia Brown has made some predictions for 2007.
Between her cigarette drags.
Right. The kid's dead.
My wife taped Sylvia Brown on Montel Williams just in case I'd be interested in, she said anything interesting that we would want to use. And she, like, my wife watched Sylvia Brown for the first time, and she said, "I couldn't believe it. She is not even trying." You know, she's just sitting up there, and people start asking about something, and she just starts throwing out random crap about, "You got angels, and I see a small woman. Goodbye." Next, you know, not even like interacting with the people, just not even trying. I'm like, yeah, that's right. That's it. She's not even trying. She was shocked at how bad she was.
She gets by on her looks.
Given her popularity. But anyway, so Sylvia Brown made a number of predictions for 2007 on the Montel Williams show, and these were dutifully recorded by a blogger who seems to be a believer. I couldn't find these on Sylvia Brown's site herself. Here are some of the predictions that she made. England and France will be hit by numerous terrorist attacks, very potentially by the underground subway system and the trains. I think she was off by a year or two for that. FEMA will be involved in a scandal and will undergo investigations about missing money. Numerous people will go to jail. That did not happen. Now, she's probably going to claim a hit for that. FEMA was involved in a scandal this year, although it had nothing to do about missing money, and nobody went to jail. Do you guys remember this?
Yes.
The sort of minor scandal, this is with the California fires, right? They had a fake press conference.
With
a FEMA agent feeding the FEMA representative, you know, questions to answer. And it was just sort of bad form. That was it. So not exactly a hit, but she'll probably claim it is. She writes, property is to boom again. Sylvia says to buy now. Flip while it's cheaper and wait a few weeks until prices soar again. Well, property values are still in the tank. Huge drug busts in June. That was nowhere. No large USA or Canada terrorist plots. She says that aviation will be secure. So that was, you know, a high probability one. So that was correct. There weren't any major terrorist attacks in USA or Canada. But, again, that's sort of just a high probability one.
A prediction on what won't happen? That's interesting.
Right. Mild East Coast winters and terrible West Coast winters. That's kind of vague. I file it under the vague category. Hepatitis C breakthrough. A possible cure will emerge. Nope.
Yeah, nope.
Polio and whooping cough outbreaks. Sylvia warns to continue getting vaccinated because polio will come back, and when it does, it will hit hard. Wrong. Depression will be linked to diets. Not in the way of losing weight, but instead they will discover chemical problems causing depression in processed foods. Wrong. Sylvia warns of an extremely rapid rate of environmental changes. You know, she's just sort of capitalizing on the topics that are in the news, you know.
Right.
But there's nothing special in 2007 about environmental change. In fact, if anything, the trends slowed down in 2007. You know, the warming trends actually were not apace with previous years. Sylvia says, and I could have easily guessed, that glaciers will be breaking apart, tornadoes will hit major U.S. cities, and specifically Texas, New Mexico, and major cities in Mexico. Volcanoes will erupt, especially in Hawaii and Italy. She warns of travel to these locations.
Also, the world will continue to spin.
Yeah, the sky will be blue on some days.
I predict that throughout the winter it will get colder and the days will get shorter, but it'll warm up again in the spring and it'll be very hot by summer.
This is what we call global warming.
That's right.
There was a couple other predictions she made, Steve. She predicted that Lee press-on nails will go on sale.
No.
And that stretch pants will continue to stretch. They will continue to stretch.
And cartons of cigarettes will go on sale.
She says a possibility of U.S. troops returning home and Bush's approval rating rising as a result. How about more U.S. troops in Iraq and Bush's approval rating continuing to decrease.
Go down.
She was close, though, because she did say something about the troops and Bush.
Yes, that's true. Something happened with the troops and
she didn't say which Bush.
A cure for autism is in sight. Finding an amino, I think she meant an amino acid, that is
no, she
lost
meant an amino.
And reversing the effects of autism. That's just not even close to anything.
She said just amino, not acid.
Yeah.
That's right.
An amino. Yeah.
She's so busy, she doesn't have time to write the word acid, all right? Come on, leave her alone.
That was Sylvia's prediction for 2007.
Do you think she has a think tank, like a group of people, and they're like, okay, let's come, or does she bang these out?
Oh, yeah, it's a real think tank over there. You know what's going to happen in 2007? They're going to decide amino acids aren't actually acidic. Write that down.
Aminos.
No, it's just her smoking a cigarette.
As my wife observed on the show today, she's not even trying. She's just pulling these out of her rather generous backside. That's it. These are simplistic because she has no respect for her audience, for her target. She thinks marks.
Her assistant comes over. She's like, Sylvia, we need your 2007 predictions quickly because we're running out of time. And she's like eating a ham sandwich and she like is mumbling. Well, you know, it's the Bush.
She's writing it down on cocktail napkins.
Yeah.
Handing them in.
I know about a psychic who was a little more specific. Have you guys ever heard of Nikki, the psychic to the stars?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Nikki.
Sadly enough, she actually does get into newspapers that are desperate to fill space and those like Us magazine, things like that. So she does these predictions every year and here's a sampling of what she predicted for 2007. I swear to God, I am not making this up, nor am I cherry picking here. An explosion around Rockefeller Center will cause havoc. Orient Express will derail and kill hundreds. A disease wipes out hundreds of walruses. A poison put into potato crops will kill thousands in the U.S. and in Canada. A Hollywood movie star is killed by a poisonous snake. A TV monitor the size of a computer nicknamed the Dream Machine will monitor your dreams while you sleep, and you'll be able to see the results the next morning. The world's largest pumpkin will be grown in Pennsylvania. A UFO will land near the Potomac River in Washington, D.C. And a serial killer dressed like the Phantom of the Opera will kill in New York City.
Oh, my God.
On Broadway or off Broadway?
I checked those out, and it turns out that she's wrong. The world's largest pumpkin was grown in Rhode Island. So,
wow, the
otherwise,
easiest one, even the
now,
easiest
did she
one
actually, she said that someone dressed up as the Phantom of the Opera is going to go around killing people?
Yes. Yes, she did. Some I missed.
What will they
I,
be singing, did she say?
She didn't.
No. Andrew Lloyd Webber or something?
I imagine they would probably be big fans, yeah.
Yeah.
She also said things about, like, London will be in a state of emergency from a fog, things like that. She's
from a fog.
Just sort of ridiculous stuff. And she actually puts these on her website, and she keeps them there. So you can scroll through her previous few years, and then for each new year, she promotes what she guessed right in the previous year. So under 2008 predictions, she mentions that she did predict the death of Anna Nicole Smith. And I checked. It's right on our website. She did. And I looked back, and also she predicted Anna Nicole's death in 2006 and 2005 and 2004 and 2003. And that's when the records run out.
Yep.
So I'm not sure how far back she was predicting it, but
every year. That reminds me of a story I heard of a surgical resident who predicted from just a vague symptom like abdominal pain that the patient had a fairly uncommon entity, a gallbladder ileus. And then the attending was really impressed. It's like, wow, how did you make this diagnosis just based upon this presentation? That was a really, really good call. Then he found out that the resident has been writing that on every patient's chart for like the whole year, knowing that eventually he would be right.
Oh, wow.
Well done.
Well done.
I'm impressed.
I found an interesting one that it kind of relates to something we talked about a few episodes ago. Is this guy is he's touted as Seer Herschel Gomez from Miami, and one of his predictions kind of struck me. It said that in May of 2007, look for the FBI to investigate a series of ghastly but surgically precise cattle mutilations in and around Crawford, Texas. The president blames Al-Qaeda terrorists, but the culprits are never found. Oh,
wow.
My God.
Al-Qaeda, did that happen and I just wasn't paying attention?
You imagine Bush being stupid enough to blame Al-Qaeda for something as stupid as that?
Yeah, we now, all know the aliens are doing it. I mean, come on. But, Bob, that makes sense because Al-Qaeda is just a government fiction used to cover up the alien invasion.
Who told you?
Everything that's blamed on Al-Qaeda really is what the men in black are doing vis-a-vis the alien greys.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I did not know that.
Including disemboweling cattle.
Yeah, yeah. For whatever nefarious purposes. One thing that's interesting is that Skeptico, now this is Skeptico with a C, which is an actually skeptical blog, made predictions for 2007, at the end of 2006, just to show that anybody could just whip out random high-probability predictions and do as well as the psychics. And he did pretty well. Let me read you a couple of them. So these were some of his predictions. Actually, when you mentioned that that one psychic predicted Anna Nicole Smith's death, again, Skeptico predicted three people would die: Kirk Douglas, Lady Bird Johnson, and Zsa Zsa Gabor. And he was right on Lady Bird Johnson.
Kirk Douglas didn't die.
I didn't feel it happen, so I don't think so.
And speaking of, my coworker predicted Anna Nicole's death, and she got a lot of points for it.
Yeah, hey, a friend of ours predicted her death in a death pool, so that wasn't that amazing. But Skeptico got Lady Bird Johnson's death correct, and even said from natural causes, which is more or less.
She was still alive.
She died this year, yeah. There will be a higher than normal number of strong hurricanes in the Atlantic. I don't think that happened this year.
God.
Below average.
Castro will remain alive and in power, but his public appearances will be rare. That was
true.
That was a pretty good one. And here's under miscellaneous, he says, Sylvia Brown, John Edward, and others will continue to appear on shows such as Montel and Larry King Live, pretending to talk to dead people. Sylvia will still not make good on her promise to try for Randy's Million. That's true. That did come
true. Mm-hmm.
True.
So I think that Skeptico did better than the Psychics this year.
He did better than Nikki, that's for sure.
I agree with that.
It's also useful to consider what the Psychics did not predict. There were a lot of things that happened this year, lots of big news stories, and the Psychics didn't predict any of the really big things that happened. No one predicted as far, again, it's always hard to make negative statements because somebody out there might find something. But as far as I could find, no psychic was taking credit for predicting the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, which happened recently. No one was taking credit for the military success of the surge in Iraq. And I mentioned that because there were lots of predictions about the troops coming home, about the surge's failure, about blah, blah, blah. But none of them actually said what happened. Similarly, there were lots of stem cell predictions going around, mainly about a resurgence of the controversy or curing diseases with stem cells, kind of obvious or just or redundant things. But nobody predicted that the stem cell controversy would essentially go away because of a breakthrough in using adult-derived stem cells. Nobody predicted that either. And also, no psychic predicted the stunning, absolutely amazing 16-0 regular season of the New England Patriots that just concluded.
That's right.
Although I predicted that.
Anybody who knew what was going on predicted.
Oh, yeah.
You would think they would go for more sports predictions because they're, a finite number of outcomes.
Right.
You'd think that they would try at least and play the odds. Better than some of the other things that they come up with.
Steve.
Yeah.
Steve, what was what were people saying about the Patriots, like, very early in the season?
That they were going to be... Yeah, there was high expectations.
Even preseason, there was a buzz about New England being amazing this year. It really would not have been a stretch to say that they were going to have an amazing year or whatever.
Psychics did not predict the Virginia Tech Massacre back in April.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
The deadliest shooting in... school shooting in U.S. history.
Anything else happened this year?
Don Imus got fired.
Yeah, Imus getting fired.
And rehired.
And rehired.
And Penn Jillette lost his radio show.
Yeah.
And there was a ghost captured on a gas station camera.
The blue ghost. Nobody
uh-huh. I read something ghost. About that.
For me, the stem cell breakthrough was really huge for me, and I'm hoping that that it really does still pan out, because it's not a done deal by any means at this point, I would say, but it does look really good.
No, and, but it's an amazing breakthrough. And to remind our listeners, researchers found a way of turning, basically making four mutations, changing four genes in an adult stem cell and giving it, as far as they could tell so far, all of the properties of an embryonic-derived stem cell, which has the potential of ending the controversy about using embryonic stem cells, because you wouldn't need to. You can get them from adults. Amazing.
So what predictions do you guys want to make for 2008?
I predict I will rock harder than I did in 2007.
That's a dirty lie. Oh.
That's what we call a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Is that what that is?
All right, I have a couple predictions. One, I predict there will be a major commercial airline disaster in March involving an airline with red in its logo and resulting in 180 deaths. That's my very specific psychic prediction.
It's pretty specific.
That's very specific.
You Does it have to be so number. Morbid?
I also predict that by the end of 2008, the SGU will exceed 50,000 listeners.
Oh, that was an upper. Okay.
And good my third you. Prediction is I predict the New England Patriots will win the Super Bowl.
Oh, come on.
Inconceivable.
Inconceivable. Okay. I predict that they will finally, sometime this year, finally find microbial evidence of life on Mars. That they'll make an announcement saying that we have the evidence. No more guessing, no more assuming. They have it.
Wow. I will give you props if that one turns out to be true, Evan.
Well, there you go.
I predict that Oprah will come up with a new form of bullcrap to peddle to her audience.
What do you mean by new form? New specifics or like a new entire genre of bullcrap?
Hey, I didn't ask you for specifics, okay?
Okay.
And Mr. March reddened the logo.
Yeah, really?
I predict that Lindsay Lohan is going to die.
Ooh.
Wow. Ouch.
Yep. I also predict that the internet is going to catch on.
The internet will finally catch on.
Yep.
You crazy kids in your inner tubes.
Smell-o-vision will make a return.
Smell-o-vision will replace television. That's an obscure Bugs Bunny reference.
Come on, Bob, throw one out there. Something.
I predict September 3rd, 2008, the world's fastest supercomputer, a petaflop supercomputer, will be announced. That's 10 to the 15 operations a second. And also that world-famous haunted house known as Haunted Corn will have 8,000 customers or zero customers.
And no rain.
But nothing in between.
Nothing in between.
Okay.
I predict that Rebecca's show will get picked up and she will be successful with it.
No, don't jinx me, Jay.
Jinx.
I officially jinxed her show.
You bastard. I hope you were crossing your fingers when you said it.
All right, let's get
Should we go
show
on to
now.
Some real news now? Okay. The next news item. This one is about Steve Irwin, who is dead. And he died this year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was
nobody predicted that.
2006, predicted that. Wasn't it?
Oh, you're right. 2006.
He was in 2006, like
and
around Labor Day.
I know
Day.
That because Nikki, psychic to the stars, says she predicted it.
Was that long ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Former croc hunter Steve Irwin is in the news again. He is the target of John Edward, who wants to make contact with Steve Irwin. John Edward is the so-called medium from Crossing Over fame. Apparently, Edward was a friend of the Irwins, you know, before he passed away. And his wife, Steve Irwin's wife, is open to John Edward making contact with her husband.
Wow.
That's so pathetic. I'm convinced that John Edward actually does know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. It's total crap and total fraud. So the fact that he could do this to somebody who he says is a friend is just so beyond like anything. I mean, I'm a pretty awful person, I'll admit.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Even okay, you guys didn't have to agree. So But even I would not do that. That's ridiculous.
That's below
John
even
Edward
you.
Is a jerk.
Now, do you think that he's actually going to say, "Okay, Steve's in the room with us now. Steve, what do you want?" Steve says, "Crikey."
Yeah. Steve, what does the afterlife look like? It's gorgeous.
It is sad. I agree with you, Rebecca. I think this is heartless exploitation. The fact it's exploiting someone that he claims to be a friend with makes it all the more despicable.
Yeah.
And, you know, because she is going through what you know, widows typically go through. She said that I know Steve's gone, but in some way he is still here. I feel him. I sense him. Yeah, you know, that's what everyone feels, you know, after someone who's really close to you has passed away. And you certainly have the desire to reconnect. And that's people in the grief stage are exploited by these mediums. It's just the whole endeavor is just completely exploitive. But she's a believer. She says that I've invited everyone who's a skeptic, because you can't leave after seeing what John does without having some appreciation for his work.
Wow. Oh, yeah, I appreciate what a gigantic con artist he is.
Right.
It does take a special sort of person to have such a complete lack of empathy.
That's really sad. I mean, she's attended one of his shows and watched him do his 4 hours of, you know, all this bullshit that's reduced down to his show, and she bought it, you know?
The next news item is about creationism in Texas. Texas is now the new target for creationists because the governor is apparently a creationist, is definitely pushing this agenda, and is doing it through the education system. Recently, the Institute for Creation Research, the ICR, they've been around for a while, moved their headquarters from California to Dallas. Huh. And now that they're in Texas, they have asked for approval from the Board of Higher Education in Texas to have the ability to grant a master's degree in creation science.
It's even better than that basket weaving degree I have.
Right.
So then what do you do with that? But what do you study?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Paper your bathroom.
Well, not only what do you do with it, but what do you study? I mean, the classes you go to, what is how to debunk evolution? Is that it? Is that what you learn?
Hey, you turn in your thesis paper. It's got three words on it. God did it. Oh, there you go. Here's your degree.
Actually, I believe that that's one word now. They've shortened it. It's just God did it.
God did it is one
it's
word
like,
now.
God did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like that other word that begins that way. Now, they haven't decided yet. They had the meeting where this was brought up, but they tabled it until the end of January. They did not grant authority to ICR, but they did not oppose granting it. So it's still being debated. So we have the window of opportunity to shower Texas with scorn and protests while they're considering this. That strategy, by the way, is working. You know, when these local school boards or state school boards or agencies with these creationism or intelligent design issues come up, focusing immediate attention on them and showering them with negative attention actually squelches these endeavors, these moves, pretty quickly. This strategy is actually paying off.
I would really love to know, like, what they think the benefit is going to be. Are you going to, what do you do? Where do you go with that? Do you become a preacher after that? What do you?
It's just trying to give legitimacy. Yeah, it's just a way of getting legitimacy.
That's all it is.
I wonder how many people are interested in actually getting the degree.
I'm sure a lot of people are.
Yeah.
One more quick news item. This, again, is under our continuing theme of how pseudoscience kills. This one comes from Bangkok, Thailand, where 4,000 soldiers who have been deployed in Pattani have been ordered, under penalty of punishment including 3 nights behind bars, are being forced to wear a protective magical amulet. Apparently in Thailand, wearing amulets is very popular. It's just part of the culture. These are amulets consecrated by the late Luang Pu Jiam. And so wearing them has been a compulsory part of the uniform. Mm. Now, the soldiers don't seem to mind it very much because many of them believe in it. Others will wear it just because they don't want to spend 3 nights in the Huskow. One private is quoted as saying in this article, "I am happy to wear it because it will protect me from harm and also from punishment."
Wow.
Well, that's probably true.
Yeah. The second part
punishment
is probably
part.
True.
Don't you just want to harm people that claim that?
Punish them.
Here's a machete. Cut your arm. Try to cut your arm.
Yeah, right. Remember that guy?
I got my amulet. Wow.
That guy was great. I mean, sad.
Very sad.
One of the soldiers was quoted as saying, "My Luang Pu Jiam amulet protected me during the Thai-Lao conflict, known as the Chong Bok Battle, in 1988. And I hope Luang Pu Jiam will continue to help me."
Yeah, one of them said that, we can't get a bulletproof vest, but at least I got the amulet. I'd rather have the bulletproof vest.
I'd rather see,
magical amulet, bulletproof vest.
Put your hand up and stop the bullet.
If you wore
enough, but if you have the amulet, you can wish for more wishes, and then you can wish for a bulletproof vest. So it's actually better.
There you go.
But what's the amulet made of?
It's metal.
Dreams.
What if you had Kevlar and titanium?
What if you had 1,000? Yeah, I'd get like 1,000 amulets and put them all over me.
Yeah, it's like chainmail.
That might actually do something.
You'd overload on the magic.
From ultraviolet radiation or something.
Worth the risk.
Well, let's move on to your emails and questions. The first email comes from Sean Rafferty at the University of Alabama, and he writes, "Hey guys, I guess that you probably get a lot of email like this, but as a professor, I can think of a half a dozen or so times when a student has told me that I made a difference in their lives, and nothing in my career so far has given me more personal and professional fulfillment. So, I'm listening to your 2007 wrap-up today, and I just wanted to take a moment to say thanks. You have all made a difference in my life, in the way I look at the world, and in the way I teach my students. I recommend your podcast in every class, and I've even seen students cite it, meaning they actually were listening. I look forward to seeing what you come up with in 2008, and I hope to meet some or all of you at some point, maybe at a TAM or something. Deepest respects and regards, Sean."
And that's how to get your email read on the Skeptic Guide.
That's right. Now, I do appreciate that, we do get a lot of emails like that, and we appreciate every single one. So I just want to say thank you to Sean and to everybody who has taken the time to write us complimentary emails. But I did include this one also because I wanted to mention that we are definitely interested in producing content that is useful for teachers and for classroom use. So if you any teachers out there who listen to the show who are interested in having content that they could use in their classroom, let us know what would be most helpful to you, what kind of things or segments you would like to see. And I can't make any promises about exactly what we're going to do or how we're going to use it, but we are definitely interested in hearing your suggestions about that.
And we can try to curse less for that episode. Maybe.
Yes.
And also, right. any teachers, professors, or anyone out there who thinks that they'd like us to speak at their school or university, please feel free to contact us. We're definitely looking for speaking engagements for us. Right, guys? Right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point, Jay. We are very interested in 2008 in going on the college lecture circuit or even high school or whatever. Either some or all of us would be happy to go to your school and give a scintillating presentation on science and skepticism.
It'd be a lot of fun.
And then later on, you can get drunk with me and Rebecca.
That's right.
Woo-hoo.
If you're 18 or older, 21.
While Evan and I point at you and laugh. The next email comes from Mark in Akron, Ohio. And he writes, I happened to see a commercial on cable TV channel that appears to be a new twist to an old scam. The ad was for Kenoki Detox Foot Pads. These are special pads that stick to the bottom of your feet at night. The pads absorb all types of toxins from your body, such as mercury, lead, pesticides, and likely also types of bad juju. Ooh. The pad looks like a funny Kotex made to fit your foot. I am sure the makers of the product are rolling in the aisle laughing at the gullibility of America and unfortunately also rolling in the money from sales of this scam. He gives the link to the website. And he says, one reason ads such as this are seen on TV is the simple fact that most of America is scientifically illiterate and will believe the pseudoscience in the ad. The second reason is non-primetime ads on cable TV channels are extremely cheap to place. Enjoy, Mark. Well, thanks for sending this, Mark. I think one or two other people also sent this to us.
I happen to have seen the commercial. I saw it.
You saw the actual commercial.
Yeah, and it was, in one regard, it was great. Like, they did a really good job of piling in as much woo as they could. I mean, no, to people like us, obviously, you look at it like, oh, every single thing they said was complete crap. But they did a good job, and they actually spent some money on the production of the commercial. There was a lot of computer graphics, like showing the toxins, you know, coming out of the body, and then they were talking about ions or some type of thing. It has, like, you know, it puts ions into your body, and they show the guy peel the pad off, and it's like it's like black where the guy's foot was.
Ew.
Like, that's all the crap coming out. And then they do a really nasty zoom in where they show you, like, the particles of stuff that came out of your feet that looks like fungus. It's really disgusting, but it's pretty cool.
Sounds awesome.
Sounds great.
What interested me about this was, as you said, Jay, the number of different types of pseudoscience they packed into one product.
Yeah.
Is this related to quantum physics at all?
It was clearly deliberate. They clearly set out to say, all right, how many different kinds of scams can we pack into this one thing? So, like, right on their website, it says, did you know there are more than 60 acupuncture points in your feet which have a direct connection to your internal organs? Like the kidney, the liver, the neck, and the stomach.
Yeah.
Right. Did you know that?
No.
So it's acupuncture. It's reflexology. That's basically what reflexology is. And then lots of vague references to toxins, which is that's the detox pseudoscience. It's very, very, you know, common. Just, you know, try to get people to be fearful of these non-specific toxins. Like the ad on their website says, you know, you're eating it every day in your food and you're breathing it in your air. It's all over the place. Your body's constantly being assaulted by toxins. And, of course, their product will magically remove it through your feet.
Into a
mechanism is.
Yeah, right, to this little pet. Mechanism, don't get technical.
Do they have a tampon version?
Oh, sorry.
But they also have, of course,
God,
the natural is all over there. The natural way to assist your body in the removal of blah, 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 whatever ails you. It's got some Chinese stuff going on there. You know, they got appeal to an ancient foreign culture. You know, things always sound more interesting when it's from another culture.
It says that the pads will remove heavy metals, metabolic waste, toxins, microscopic parasites, mucus, chemicals, and cellulite.
Ew.
Ooh,
and
cellulite.
Steve, is there really snot on my feet?
Depends. What are you doing?
So I'm watching the commercial, and then I'm sitting there, and I do my quickie 1-2 analysis. Okay, first of all, do they put something in that pad to make it turn black? I wonder if they actually created them with the scam involved in mind. Like, okay, we want this thing to turn black after somebody wears it for 8 hours while they're in bed.
Well, I don't know what's in there, but off the top of my head, just put a little bit of, was it iodine or something?
Yeah, iodine.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's it. You put a little iodine in there, it'll turn black just from the sweat of your feet.
And of course, they have the obligatory testimonials with like the people.
Gotta have those.
I've tried other so-called detox packages, but they don't even come close to providing the same results as the Kenoki detox foot pads. So don't settle for less. Yeah, I'm sure that that lady said that.
I've read letters to Penthouse that are more believable than that.
You've probably written letters to Penthouse.
Fake. More than
that. These were all
those
true.
Letters are fake.
Women never fake.
They were signed by a notary, okay?
All right, one more email. This one comes from Greg Tolley from Tennessee. And Greg writes, "Hello, skeptics. I have recently watched the Cosmos series and read some of the Ender's Game books. This has made me consider travel through deep space, but I do not know too much about the subject. If possible, could you tell me about the feasibility of some ideas these series have conjured for me? First, from what I understand of relativistic speeds, if we ignore the stresses of rapid acceleration, one could travel from the Earth to a star, to any star in the universe in the blink of an eye, in subjective time. So, though time would pass for everyone else, a person could travel to anywhere in their lifetime. Now, I know almost nothing about quantum mechanics, you and every psychic out there, but from your show, you have talked about quantum entanglement. Does this mean that even though I may be on a star light years away, we could transmit messages instantaneously, similar to the Ansible in Ender's Game? Finally, from what I know, the warping of space-time would seem to be possible. Would it be possible for humans to ever warp space such that we can move light years by moving only a few kilometers subjectively? I mean this not as the warp drive from Star Trek, but as a way to move at relativistic speed without the need of a long-term acceleration." Well, Bob, you could not resist this email.
Yeah, let's just hand this one right over to Bob.
There you go, Bob.
No, Steve, I'm sure you could do a good job with this one, too. But this hits several interesting points, stuff that I love here. The first one was the if you ignore the stresses of rapid acceleration, could you travel from Earth to a star in the another star in the universe in a blink of an eye? And that's true. With time dilation, once you get up to significant fractions of the speed of light, time dilation really kicks in. And subjectively, you could travel to the end of the galaxy or to the Andromeda galaxy, and subjectively, very little time would have passed for you. But of course, the kicker is, of course, that by the time you get back to Earth, thousands or millions or billions of years would have passed. So if you don't really care about the fate of the Earth and all your friends that you leave behind, you could, and I believe, as it said in Cosmos, you could circumnavigate the known universe. And I think Sagan said something like 50 years or something.
If I recall, if you were accelerating at a constant 1G, it would take 57 years to circumnavigate the known universe.
Hmm. Right, yeah. And of course you could...
Which is a lifetime, yeah.
Right, and you can come back to your origin point. Of course, you wouldn't be able to stop because you'd be going damn fast by that time. But that is true. That is absolutely true. And I've always thought that, say whatever, life extension pans out and, you know, you're 10,000 years old and you're just totally, you just want to end it. The last thing I would do is I would just circumnavigate the known universe and however long it takes, and you could literally do it. You could travel pretty much anywhere you want.
As long as you don't care about coming back.
Right. At some point, I know.
Could you travel
care.
To black? Could you visit? You know, black holes.
Yeah. Sure. Absolutely.
But not jump in and out of black. You can jump in and out of black holes doing that.
No. If you want to turn totally to spaghetti, different. just head right for it. But
Bob, what about we said this in a previous episode where there's parts of the universe that are so far away that the light won't actually get to us because they're moving away faster.
Right.
Do you think that at some point, this is going to be, I don't know how to put this without sounding totally ignorant, but is the universe going to be expanding so fast that you won't be able to get to the other side or to the, you know, to a particular point?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, aren't there parts of space now that we could never actually detect because it's past that threshold. If it hasn't yet...
Yeah, well, we think that there is, but it's hard to be sure because
you can't
see it, right? So
right.
Probably the observable universe is only part of the entire universe because there are parts that are already beyond our envelope, our light envelope,
right.
Or what we could ever get to by traveling even at the speed of light.
Right, you'd have to exceed the speed of light, which isn't going to happen. So, yeah, that's
right.
True. There are areas you would just keep traveling away and, you know, the expansion of the universe would just keep creating more space for you to travel in and you'd never really be getting to the end.
So the universe could be infinite. We'd never know it.
Yeah, but it probably isn't.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really.
I wouldn't waste all that time by traveling just to see the end. I mean, I just reprogram my brain so I'm not bored anymore.
Yeah, just delete. Yeah, I saw this movie 10,000 times. Just delete any memory of that movie, and I could watch it fresh.
Yeah, like imagine being able to watch Napoleon Dynamite like 5-6 times in a row, like a kid could, and enjoy it.
How was that, by the way, Jay?
That movie's awesome.
I mean, watching it 5-6 times.
I loved it. Like I had to memorize the whole thing.
Like a kid, right?
The second one references quantum entanglement. And that's pretty interesting stuff. He says, does this mean that even though I may be on a star light years away, we could transmit messages instantaneously? No, it doesn't. Quantum entanglement may seem on the surface that it could allow that, but it really doesn't. The idea is with quantum entanglement is that you've got a particle that decays and releases two particles in opposite directions. Those particles, under certain circumstances, can be entangled in that they are correlated in a way that you, in order to describe it quantum mechanically, you have to reference both of these guys. So there's some sort of connection between these two. So if, say, for example, the parent particle had zero spin, in order, because of conservation of momentum and things, if one particle is spin up, the other one has to be spin down. They both can't be spin up or spin down because then you'd be breaking all sorts of laws. It'd be pretty nasty. So if these things, and this has been proven, if these things are, say, a foot away or 10 light years away, if one is determined to be spin up, the other one would have to be spin down. If somebody measured it at that point, then it would be spin down. So there's some sort of correlation going on between these particles, even though they're separated by, it could be millions of light years. There's some sort of correlation going on, and people have taken that to mean that, well, then you could communicate somehow these vast distances instantaneously, and you really can't do that. There's various funky ways you could explain that. One I discovered today, it's called the no-cloning theorem, and I gave that a read, and boy, I it's going to take many more readings for me to fully understand that. But we don't need to resort to some of those ideas. Basically, the idea is you can't transmit information using right. this process because if you determine that this is spin up, it's still random. You don't know whether it's going to be spin up or spin down. So it's random. So that doesn't mean you can transmit, let's say the zeros and one bits of information to this other guy light years away because it's still a random process. So there's no way to do that.
Yeah, you can't transmit actual information faster than the speed of light with this method. However, it can be used theoretically as a way of encrypting messages because of the entanglement. So like one particle could contain the encryption for the other one, but the information would still have to be transmitted at normal light speeds.
There are practical uses for this. Another one is the quantum teleportation you might have heard about, and that involves using various entangled states, and then a conventional means of communication is required. So even in that, quantum teleportation may sound fantastic, but it's still you're not doing anything that's violating relativity or anything that Einstein came up with.
Right. Einstein still reigns.
Right. Mm. And the last one is interesting. Would it be possible?
Well, Bob, before you leave that one, though, I just wanted to mention, he mentions Ender's Game as a science fiction that uses it. I'm actually personally familiar with two other science fiction stories that use the exact same concept. There's many. There's two that I've read myself. One is The Gap series by Stephen R. Donaldson, and the other one is the Golden Compass trilogy. Which I recently read.
Really?
And by the way, it is an awesome, awesome science fiction for skeptics. It's like Lord of the Rings with a hardcore skeptical message. So I really recommend it. But in that, they used a crystal, a lodestone, where it's entangled and you split it in two. And so if two people have a piece of it, you can communicate instantaneously across meta universe, meta worlds. But as you discussed, that wouldn't actually work.
Interesting. That's I highly recommend reading that series of books. They're fantastic.
Yeah, I've read a couple, and that was very good stuff. The last question from Greg was, would it be possible for humans to ever warp space such that we can move light years by moving only a few kilometers subjectively? That seems incredibly unlikely. According to Lawrence Krauss, who we interviewed recently, you would need huge amounts of mass to be able to warp space. Now the idea is that you would expand space behind the ship and then kind of compress it in front of the ship so that essentially you'd be moving through space, but you're not really moving. So relativity doesn't really come into effect because you're kind of traveling along with space. So you're not moving at all. So none of that stuff comes into play. The problem is, of course, there's always some problem with stuff like this, is that you would need gargantuan amounts of mass. And I found some discrepancies about how much mass you would need. I believe Krauss said you would need, you know, something like on the order of the mass of the universe worth of energy in order to do this type of thing. Other sources I found said it was merely the mass of black holes that you'd have to manipulate in order to do this, which is, you know, of course, still gargantuan. And the other one, and so that's, if that wasn't bad enough, this one that I think is the real killer is that you would actually have to, you can't just, you know, compress space in front of you and just move along. You'd actually have to map out your path in order so that you can compress it properly. And to do that, you would have to send a normal speed of light signal through space and to determine exactly the type of space you're traveling through in order to compress it properly. So that's like the ultimate limit then. That would limit you because you've got that signal. You've got to map it out first.
In Star Wars, they had a nav computer for that or something.
Yeah, but still.
Can you just use your Heisenberg compensators?
You come up with them, and we're all set.
Just stay home and play Call of Duty 4, you know, whatever.
Right. There we go.
So dilithium crystals won't cut it, huh?
No.
Allow me to just say at this time, nerds.
Yeah, nerds.
Okay.
You guys should be ashamed of yourself.
I found a magazine last week called Geek. That's it. It's just called Geek.
And you opened it up, and there was a picture of you in there.
No, it looked good.
A picture of you guys inside.
It actually looked good. All
we're on the cover.
Science fiction and technical doodads. It looked pretty cool.
Hey, geeks rule the world.
All the newest fanny packs.
What was the centerfold? Utility belt. Quad core computer or something.
One tiny update on the whole fanny pack thing. Since you bring it up, is that some of our British listeners and Australian listeners have pointed out that fanny doesn't mean what it means in America over in the rest of the world.
I think I mentioned that during our initial conversation, didn't I?
What's a fanny?
No.
You don't know what a fanny is?
It's a few inches forward.
On
really?
Girls.
On girls.
Oh, on girls. Girls.
Yeah, it means girly bits.
It's a nappy dugout.
What?
So fanny pack takes on a whole nother meaning depending on where you go.
A very different meaning.
Talk in your fanny pack, governor.
I predict in 2008, fanny packs will still be stupid and lame.
But utility belts are going to take off, baby.
Take literally and figuratively. Uh-huh,
literally, yeah. Fly into the air. Good luck with that.
To infinity and beyond.
I'm taking orders for the skeptical utility belt.
Mm-hmm.
Just as soon as I design.
Steve, you know what we should do? We should make one. We do know a guy that's a leathersmith.
Yeah, it's true. We do. We know.
Of course, you know a leathersmith.
We know a tanner.
Does he make your costumes for when you're out in the woods hitting each other with foam swords?
Not done.
Maybe, please, Rebecca.
Maybe,
Steve. We should have him make one, and then we will take the prototype and we'll auction it off at TAM 6.
There we go.
Ooh,
and we'll wear them ourselves at TAM 6.
Oh, geez,
especially Rebecca.
I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We will all be sporting utility belts.
I'd have to sign off on that.
I'm gonna put initials on yours. Rebecca Angela Watson. Raw.
Angela is my new middle name.
Well, it has to be because otherwise it, you know, doesn't say raw.
No, my middle name is Awesome, actually.
Whatever, as long as it says raw.
Awesome Watson.
Can you put a little like condom holder in mine or something?
Not a little one.
there will be a small Velcro pouch, which will be multifunction. You could put whatever you want in there.
Okay.
Well, let's move on to science or fiction.
It's time for science or fiction.
Each week, I come up with three science news items or facts, two genuine and one fictitious, and then I challenge my panel of esteemed skeptics to tell me which one is the fake. Are you guys ready for this week?
Absolutely.
First one of 2008. Let's see how you do.
Yes, Mr. Trebek.
Got a theme this week. I know how you love themes. The theme this week is evolution.
Ooh.
Cool.
Ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Number one. Scientists have filled in a missing gap in the evolution of the RNA protein system from just RNA. Item number two, the Journal for the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology has just published a position paper in which they advocate the teaching of intelligent design alongside Darwinian evolution in public school science classrooms. And item number three, sociobiologist E.O. Wilson has proposed a controversial mechanism for the evolution of social insects that involves colony-level selection rather than individual selection. Evan, you have the honor of going first.
Yay,
in 2008.
Evan.
Thank you, thank you. Well, being an expert in all three of these areas, I can tell you that, number one, scientists have filled in a missing gap in the evolution of RNA protein systems from RNA. I say that one is fiction.
Already?
There
Jay?
You go.
Good job.
You said that
very
the first one is fiction.
Yep. RNA, fiction.
I'm unclear on it, Steve. Scientists have filled in a missing gap in the evolution of RNA protein systems for RNA.
From RNA. That's correct. So at one point in the history of life on Earth, it was just RNA. And then at some point, there was RNA making protein, which was then helping the RNA function. A very critical early step in evolution of life on Earth. And they filled in a missing gap in that evolutionary process.
Okay. Well, that not ringing a bell... that sounds totally plausible to me. The Journal for the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology, wow, that is a wordy title, have just published a position paper in which they advocate the teaching of intelligent design alongside Darwinian evolution in public school and science classrooms. All right, so the question here is the Journal for the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology full of shit or not? And I don't think any of us know the answer to that right now. The last one. E.O. Wilson has proposed a controversial mechanism for the evolution of social insects that involves colony-level selection rather than individual selection. I'm going to go with the Journal for the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology one as the fake.
Okay, Bob?
Yeah, Jay's right about two in that it all comes down to this this society here, this journal. And it sounds – just the title sounds sketchy for me. The Journal for the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology. That sounds whack to me. So I think they – that probably just goes along with other things that they've done to suggest that. So to me, that seems like science, if you want to call it that. E.O. Wilson – colony-level selection rather than individual selection. So how would colonies of insects evolve instead of... How would they... How do the colonies interact?
It's controversial.
I don't know. Let's see. Scientists... Number one, this one sounds a little sketchy to me. Missing gap in the evolution of RNA. That would be pretty huge if they did that. But how would they determine that?
And is that, oh, my God.
I know. All right. Chill. I'll pick one. One is the RNA protein synthesis is fiction.
Okay. Rebecca?
Okay. I have a friend, very, very good friend, who works at Harvard on RNA. So I'm going to feel really stupid if I get this wrong. But I think that that's science. I think that the Federation of American Sciences for Experimental Biology, I think that they're actually for real. So I'm going to say that the second item is fiction.
Alrighty. So we're split on one and two. You all agree that sociologist E.O. Wilson has proposed a controversial mechanism for the evolution of social insects that involves colony-level selection rather than individual selection. And that one is science.
Nice.
You're all safe so far.
Hooray.
E.O. Wilson, you know, is actually an excellent author. I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with him. He wrote the book Consilience about science. But even though he writes on sort of big scientific philosophical topics, his area of research is primarily ants, or the group that they belong to, Hymenoptera. Now, within the Hymenoptera, there are some insects that have social systems, you know, like ants and bees that have social colonies. And the question's always been, what evolutionary selective pressures are at work that will allow for example, the existence of drones that forego their own mating in order to support the colony so some other, you know, bee or ant can mate and pass on the genes. Part of the answer to that is that the social insects often have a type of genetics called haplodiploidy, where cousins or like half brothers and sisters share a lot of genetic material. So you can argue that this is kin selection, meaning that you are maybe sacrificing yourself so that your genes could get passed down through some kin, some closely related member of your close group. And this is even more true in these types of insects. However, what E.O. Wilson is arguing is that is not a sufficient explanation for this phenomenon, because you know, many haplodiploid insects are not social. It's still a very rare occurrence. So what he's saying is that perhaps selective pressures are acting at the level of the colony itself, and that those colonies that display this eusociality, which is the name for this cooperation, you know, among colonies, eusociality outcompetes those that didn't, and that there was actually selective pressures occurring at the level of the colony itself. This is controversial because, you know, the conventional wisdom is that evolution doesn't really work that way. It has to work at the level of individuals. And what critics, even of this, you know, recent paper of Wilson's, are saying is that his proposal doesn't explain why within that system, within pressures at the colony level, why the system would not be sabotaged by an individual who is just going to engage in behavior that's in their own personal reproductive interests and not the interest of the whole colony. So that's always the problem, is that the individual can always subvert the system by doing what's good for them, and that selective pressures would always favor that because, you know, those are the ones that are going to pass their genes on. So it still has to work at the individual level. There has to be some kin selection going on. So anyway, that's a controversy, you know, and Wilson, E.O. Wilson, he recently wrote the paper coming down on that one side, so we'll have to watch and see how this plays out. But it's a very, very interesting sort of debate that goes on within evolutionary circles. Number one, scientists have filled in a missing gap in the evolution of RNA protein systems from RNA, and that one is also science. This is very interesting because this is an area of early evolution that is very, you know, poorly understood and for which there's very little evidence, obviously, because it's something that happened in the deep, dark recesses of early, you know, life on Earth. I found this one interesting because this is often a target for, you know, intelligent design proponents and creationists who say, you know, talk about, like, you know, cells popping up spontaneously, and they're really bypassing, you know, millions of years and many steps in the evolution of life. One of those steps being that, you know, at some point in time, there was just a molecule that could replicate itself, RNA. And RNA did everything that it needs to do in order to reproduce itself. But then at some point, RNA molecules gained the ability to control or guide the formation of proteins from amino acids. And then those proteins took over some of the processes that the RNA was doing by itself, or began to facilitate, you know, enzymatically make more efficient the processes that RNA was doing. And then that led to this cooperation between RNA and proteins, which was a pretty big step in the evolution of life on this planet. Mm. Well, now a scientist looking at the structure of proteins from a very primitive fungus. You know, and funguses were one of the earliest types of cells to arise on Earth. And they've learned some things about how the first proteins may have interacted with RNA by comparing it to other primitive life that does not have this relationship, where the RNA is undergoing certain chemical reactions. And in this fungus, the protein has taken over those properties or those processes from RNA. So it's not obviously looking at life that's actually like fossilized or whatever that's actually, you know, 4 billion years old. It's looking at very primitive but still living, still extant life forms that show how the pathway that this evolution may have taken.
Steve, who did the study?
This study was done by Barbara Golden. Do you know her?
No. Where is she?
In the University of Texas at Austin. It's the scientists from Purdue University and the University of Texas at Austin, including Barbara Golden. Published today in the journal Nature. Which means that the journal for the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology have just published a position paper in which they advocate the teaching of intelligent design alongside Darwinian evolution in public school science classrooms is fiction.
Oh, thank goodness.
What they did do was publish a position paper advocating for the teaching of evolution to the exclusion, specifically the exclusion of intelligent design and creationism.
Hooray.
Yeah. Now, this is the name of the organization is a terrible mouthful, but they are, and it is a coalition of associations. And they actually, this was a position paper that was published by a coalition of 17 organizations, such as the National Academy of Sciences, the American Institute of Physics, and the National Science Teachers Association, among others, published in this journal, saying essentially that the introduction of non-science, such as creationism and intelligent design, undermines the fundamentals of science education. They write, this is a quote taken from Gerald Weissman, who is the editor-in-chief of this journal. In an age when people have benefited so greatly from science and reason, it is ironic that some still reject the tools that have afforded them the privilege to reject them. So this was a very positive thing, and I do think that it is a good thing that mainstream scientific organizations, especially those promoting science education, are unflinching, unafraid, and bold in saying we must teach science and we cannot teach nonsense or pseudoscience or non-science.
Damn straight.
He also added, this is a fine line, the bottom line is that the world is round, humans evolved from an extinct species, and Elvis is dead.
Yeah.
That was Wiseman said that.
Elvis is dead? Oh.
Elvis yeah. Presley, not Elvis Costello.
Oh. Phew.
I know. I often get those confused, too.
Scared me.
Now, Evan.
Hi.
This brings us to a very bittersweet portion of our show this week. You were going to read us last week's, it's actually now, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Puzzle, and tell us the answer.
Okay. So the puzzle was this. Two famous skeptical events are related. One lasted about 18 seconds. The other happened 4 years later and lasted about 58 seconds. What were they? And the answer was the 18-second happening was that of the famous Zapruder film, you know, the JFK assassination film that I'm sure we've all seen at some point in our lives. Mm-hmm. And then that was in 1963. And then in 4 years later, in 1967, we had 58 seconds of the famous Patterson Bigfoot film. Mm-hmm. So these were related only in celluloid, as they say, in that two very famous pieces of film footage are continually bantered about by skeptics, believers, conspiracy theorists, what have you, and mm-hmm. That's the relation between the two. So,
why is that bittersweet?
Well,
I'm getting there.
First of all, Richard Feynman was the first one to answer correctly. He figured it out, so congratulations.
Not Richard, the scientist.
No.
He's dead.
Richard Feynman, F-I-N-E-M-A-N, is his name on the message board. So congratulations. Oh. Way to put it together. And, you know, I guess it's sad in a way because we are retiring the skeptical puzzle from the SGU.
No.
Yes, because we're going to be moving on to some older, bolder, and bigger, and even maybe better things for 2008.
Evan is going to take a break from the skeptical puzzle. We don't know if we're going to bring it back in some other form or somebody else, but for now, we're not going to have a skeptical puzzle, and Evan is going to be shifting his time into working on at least one, if not more, new segments for the show. So
that will
lead to better and newer things.
Absolutely. Plus, I will also be producing the new podcast, mm-hmm. Skeptic's Guide 5x5, that will be coming out very shortly. So my time will also be devoted in making sure that that gets out every week to everyone. So, like I said, it'll just be on to bigger and hopefully better things for us. And, you know, who knows? Maybe one day we'll bring the puzzle back, or we'll have it back occasionally here and there if something interesting comes up. But as a weekly occurrence, this will be the end of the skeptical puzzle, at least for now.
Well, Evan, thank you for doing that for... Well, more than a year, right?
It's been a lot of fun. I've learned a lot. Yeah. Actually, reading up on a lot of these things that I've had to. It's been an excellent learning experience, and I hope for all of you as well that you gained something out of it. If nothing else, it was, you know, fun and amusement. So,
the highlight of the skeptical puzzle
was the rap puzzle.
that was a great creative moment in history, wasn't it?
Fine line between highlight and low light, huh?
Yeah. Look.
It all depends on what angle you're looking at it from.
Look, it's art. If someone's going to pay $38 million for a soup can, for a Campbell's soup can, they can appreciate a skeptical rap. Thank you.
Right. Evan, and that was followed closely by the limerick, right? Didn't you do a limerick puzzle?
Yeah. We started talking about limericks shortly after that.
And that was a big deal.
That took on a life of its own.
Yeah, those were two items that we should have really talked about in the year in review. That was a big deal.
Yeah, we didn't.
A lot of people enjoyed that.
Yeah. We actually still need to publish all of the limericks in some form. Maybe we should publish a book.
Ooh.
Skeptical limericks.
Wouldn't the limericks actually have to be good for that?
A lot of them were good.
That is a good
bad.
Point. You could be a short book.
I'm just saying. I'm just putting that out there.
All right. A pamphlet, all right?
Okay.
A white paper.
I'm picturing something that a crazy person might hand you on the subway, you know?
Well, listen, we'll take pictures at our upcoming events, and then we'll have a book with pictures of skeptics and limericks by skeptics about skepticism.
You know, Steve, that's kind of like that poetry book that you pay to be in, and then the only people that buy it are the people that are in it.
Hey, I was in that.
The Vanity Press?
Yeah, whatever that is. I would like to thank Evan for all the work he put into the puzzle. I know, you know, it's a pain in the ass just to come up with a good quote every week, and you came up with a puzzle, you know, so I can imagine you spent a lot of time doing it.
I did. You know, there were some puzzles came very easy to me, and others took literally hours of research and work to do. But, you know, like I said, it was fun. It was a good learning experience. I did learn a lot of things that I hadn't known before, and I think we all walked away with something, didn't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Good job, Evan. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
And Jay, talking of the quote, you will still be doing the quote at the end of the show.
I'll do the quote for today, but I don't know if it's going to make it to next week. But I have a special thing I'm going to do tonight for the quote.
Oh, I hope it's a rap.
That would be so cool.
It's not a rap.
No. Uh-huh.
But, you know, I knew that we were going to be talking in part about Sylvia Brown tonight. And I thought, let me check out some of her quotes. So instead of reading one, I'm going to read a bunch because they're short and they're all kind of weird and funny. And, it's just a cool little thing. So, everybody knows who Sylvia Brown is. So here's a few of her quotes. A ghost is someone who hasn't made it. In other words, who died. And they don't know they're dead. So they keep walking around and thinking that you're inhabiting their, let's say, their domain. So they're aggravated with you. On to the next one. A spirit is like your mother, my dad, who've made it. They can come around, but they come around in a loving way because they've already made it to God. Most people make it. Animal totems, like the tiger, come from the other side to protect us while we are away from home. There's another one.
What's your totem, Jay?
My totem? I have an affinity with bald eagles and monkeys.
Wow, that's a dangerous combination, bird and monkey.
Let's not start that whole thing again.
No, I'm not trying to, but those are like two of my favorite animals. I got more. Let me assure you that all of our pets and animals of every kind will be with us for eternity on the other side.
Whew, that's good to know.
Wow.
The more
even that tiger that mauled those kids at the zoo or what?
Yeah, imagine.
Yeah, no psychic predicted that, by the way, either. The tiger that jumped up over the 12.5-foot wall and killed a guy.
There you go.
A few more.
Oh, yeah, don't go to zoos that don't have at least 16-foot tiger walls, by the way.
Yeah, don't get drunk and say Jesus will protect you and go into a cage with any kind of...
Sorry, I had my amulet. I'm good.
Got your anti-tiger amulet?
Oh, yeah.
All right, I got a few more. The more painful it is, tragically, the more you do learn, though, that's the good part. The weeds keep multiplying in our garden, which is our mind,
ruled by fear. Rip them out and call them by name. And then my favorite, someone asked her, what age is the spirit? 30. All 30. When I found this out, I said, why 30? Why not 40? Why not 50? Why not 12? It just happens to be 30.
Wow, that's so true.
Does that mean all spirits are 30?
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently.
Is that what she means?
Yep. I guess that's the age, like when you see the spirit, when she's calling a spirit, you know. They don't show up as a kid
you
or anything.
As
they show up
as 30 years old.
They show
what if
up
they died at 29?
30, yeah.
Jay, you should end with your favorite quote about from Sylvia.
Yeah, go
my
ahead,
Jay. My favorite quote from Sylvia, yes, absolutely, is, the kid's dead.
He's dead. It was terrible.
I see water. There's water. I see the chest wound and a head.
Yeah, he died in the head of
the kid's
chest,
wearing a so. Uniform behind a red door.
She does. She is not even trying. Those are like so vacuous, common. If you just had to like make up random statements about ghosts and stuff, just that you absorb from the culture, that's what it is. Like not
designed to impress the likes of Montel Williams. That's all you need to know.
I see a Big Mac with a large fry. She really, guys. Honestly, no. She's a man, right? Like she there's something not right.
Only
there.
Her hands and face and body. Know?
Oh, boy. Well, thank you all once again for joining me.
It's a rocking start
you,
to 2008.
Steve. Yeah.
I feel like this is going a long way towards my rocking resolution.
Yes. Maybe thank we should you. Have a resolution that the entire Skeptics Guide is going to rock hard this year, 2008.
No, you guys can't just ride on my coattails like that.
we're going to encroach upon your New Year's resolution.
Steve, I want to issue a warning to our listeners.
Yeah.
Don't buy Frank's homeopathic pet spray for joint pain. It's a sham.
Okay.
But Pete's is the real one.
Have you guys seen that commercial?
Frank's.
Yeah, that was good.
No.
Yeah.
Jay, like, have you been up at night late or something? You have insomnia?
I had a week off. I had the last week off from work for the holiday, you know. And yeah, I spent a lot of time like just doing the guy thing, you know,
watching infomercials,
whatever. You
is
know.
That the guy thing?
Switching
is
between
that what it
infomercials
is?
And Skinamax or whatever.
Yeah, I've always wondered. I thought it was sitting around in your underwear scratching yourself.
Don't joke around. That you know.
I guess you can do that while
of
watching.
Course I do that.
Not very rocking, Jay. That's all I have to say. Not very rocking.
I do it in a sexy way.
Okay, that's enough. So anyway, I think, Steve, you were saying something about wrapping up the show.
Yeah, I think that'll just about do it. So thanks again for joining me, everyone. And here's looking to a great 2008.
Here, here.
Happy New Year.
And until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by the New England Skeptical Society in association with the James Randi Educational Foundation and SkeptChick.org. For more information on this and other episodes, please visit our website at www.theskepticsguide.org. For questions, suggestions, and other feedback, please use the Contact Us form on the website or send an email to info@theskepticsguide.org. If you enjoyed this episode, then please help us spread the word by voting for us on Dig or leaving us a review on iTunes. You can find links to these sites and others through our homepage. Theorem is produced by Kinetto and is used with permission.